It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station. We're broadcasting from up here on Signal Hill in beautiful downtown Kodiak, where it's 45 degrees, fair skies, light winds. They are still saying there's a 10% chance of rain after 4 p.m. today, but mostly sunny skies with a high near 44, south winds to 10. Rain and snow is likely tonight after 1 a.m., but little or no snow accumulation. Southeast winds to 20, gusting to 30 tonight. Mostly cloudy skies, a low around 35. For tomorrow, rain and snow becoming all rain after 4 p.m., high near 40. Southeast winds to 20, gusting to 35 tomorrow, with little or no snow accumulation expected. Coming up on the Midday Report, a new tower may be on the way for Near Island. The Kodiak School District has opened a new family resource center. And a new totem pole was just finished in Juneau. We'll hear the celebration.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. A judge is ordering the suspect in the New York City mass shooting this week to remain behind bars. Frank R. James made his first court appearance today since his arrest for the attack on commuters in Brooklyn that left more than 20 people injured, 10 with gunshot wounds. Gwen Hogan of Member Station WNYC has more.
62-year-old Frank R. James faces a terrorist charge of attacking a mass transportation system. If he's convicted, he could spend the rest of his life in prison. During a federal court proceeding, James's attorneys asked for a psychiatric evaluation while he's in detention. U.S. District Attorney Sarah Winnick called it one of the worst attacks on the city in two decades. She says James carefully planned it and caused terror for victims and across New York. A judge ordered James detained at the Metropolitan Detention Center less than a mile away from the subway station where the attack occurred. 10 people were shot in the chaotic scene Tuesday morning during the rush hour commute. All the victims were expected to survive. For NPR News, I'm Gwen Hogan in New York.
The state of Florida is banning nearly all abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy. NPR's Greg Allen reports the new law signed by the Republican governor today is similar to one in Mississippi that seeks to overturn the landmark Supreme Court decision Roe v. Wade.
Florida's law doesn't include any exceptions for pregnancy caused by rape or incest. It bans all abortions after 15 weeks, except for those that threaten the life of the mother. It was patterned after a Mississippi law now under review by the Supreme Court. Arizona recently adopted a similar measure. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signed the bill into law before a crowd of anti-abortion activists.
This will represent the most significant protections for life that have been enacted in this state in a generation.
The law is seen as a direct challenge to Roe v. Wade, which has been interpreted to allow abortions until the third trimester, about 24 weeks of pregnancy. Greg Allen, NPR News, Miami.
The Pentagon says it's unable to immediately confirm what caused a massive fire aboard a Russian warship in the Black Sea. Ukraine's military says it struck the cruiser with two missiles, while Russia claims an accidental fire is to blame. Here's NPR's Tom Bowman.
A senior defense official says there's significant damage to the Moskva, which is under its own power, with sailors still battling the fire. And that damage could have been caused by a missile or something else. The official says it appears a ship is headed toward the Crimean port of Sevastopol. Ukraine has said two anti-ship Neptune missiles struck the ship, and the Pentagon official says the Moskva was about 60 miles south of Odessa and within range of the missiles. The U.S. official also noted that 4 or 5 other Russian ships in the Black Sea started heading south after the fire. Tom Bowman, NPR News.
The Dow is down 113 points to 34,451. This is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
Kodiak School District's new Family Resource Center is meant to help parents access tutoring services, English language learning programs, and even employment opportunities. KMXT's Dylan Simard reports that this new facility was created to help families bridge cultural and linguistic barriers to take advantage of educational opportunities here in town.
Every parent wants their children to succeed in school, but not every parent is in the same position. Getting support from a school district can be a daunting task. Superintendent Larry Ledoux says that the goal is to make the school system more accessible to parents who may only speak Spanish or Tagalog with fluency, in the interest of making it more accessible to all students.
We thought we had a good system, but I think it's sort of in our head we thought we had a good system that met the needs. But I think you really have to look at these things from your heart. Look at the fear when you don't speak the language or the education system that you come from is very different.
As an example, parents looking for extra help with their child's homework can get signed up for the Alaska State Library Tutoring Service or get their child signed up with the high school's homework club. Laura Griffin works at the center and speaks Spanish fluently. She's there to give parents who may not be fluent in English assistance with navigating the public school system and resources in the wider Kodiak community.
A lot of the times they don't know, not because they don't want to know, they just generally don't know because it might be a language barrier or they don't know what is occurring in the Kodiak area. And we just want to make sure that everyone has a bit of equity and can thrive in our community.
The center can also help parents access programs at the local college, as well as English language programs and employment opportunities in town. Those interested in the center can find it underneath Subway and across from Thai Market at 326 Center Street, Suite 90B. And now, Bernadette Villarroya and Laura Griffin will invite parents to the center in both Tagalog and Spanish.
Magandang gabi po sa inyong lahat. Narito po ako sa ating facilidad para tulungan ang bawat pamilya para merong kung may kailanganin kayo ng tulong, informasyon. Ang facilidad na ito ay parte ng school district. Magpunta lang kayo dito sa ibaba ng Subway downtown sa may Thai Market at nandito kami from 5:30 to 7:30 para makapaglingkod sa inyo. Salamat po.
Hola, me llamo Laura y trabajo para el Centro de Recursos para Familias. Nuestro programa ayuda a estudiantes del distrito y sus familias. La programa proveerá servicios de ayuda a padres a encontrar empleo con el distrito, ayuda con tarea y compartimos recursos para estudiantes y familias en la ciudad. Por favor, venga y visita nuestro centro.
In Kodiak, I'm Dylan Simard.
A new Verizon cell phone tower could be coming to Near Island, just across the harbor from downtown Kodiak. City Council members gave tacit approval during Tuesday's work session to begin negotiating a lease with Florida-based Vertical Bridge Development, which would build the tower on behalf of Verizon. Tuesday's work session was a preliminary discussion. Council would still need to bring a draft ordinance to a public hearing and vote before anything could be built. But Councilmember John Whidden said a new tower could have some public benefit.
One, additional revenue for the city and additional competition for the self-service providers in town. So I think ultimately for the public, it could well be, a benefit to have another competitor in town.
If approved, the new 130-foot tower would occupy a site next to an existing communications tower on Near Island. The cell carrier would pay the city more than $14,000 annually for the site, and no trees would be removed. Verizon already has a cell tower on Pillar Mountain overlooking downtown that's inaccessible to vehicles in the winter. Kodiak City Council has no scheduled date yet for a future hearing or vote on the project. A totem pole that's carved all the way around was just finished in Juneau this week. It's the first of its kind in Alaska. And in a last-minute celebration yesterday, people danced and sang to honor the artists who carved and painted the pole. KTOO's Lindsay Brolini has this story.
The Alaska Heritage Institute's arts campus isn't finished yet, but on a sunny mid-April afternoon, about 50 people gathered there to celebrate a totem pole being completed. It's called the Sea Alaska Cultural Values Totem Pole, and it's been in the works for over half a year. It's a 360-degree pole, which means it's carved all the way around instead of just on one side. The lead carver is head artist T.J. Young, but he didn't do it alone. He had the help from his brother Joe Young and from apprentices Andrea Cook and Greg Frisbee.
I'd like to thank my apprentices. They did a really good job. They showed up every day.
Young also got help from Tsimshian artist David R. Boxley and Tlingit artist Robert Mills. He wanted a Tsimshian and a Tlingit carver to carve a figure on the top, since the three figures together represents the three native tribes of Southeast Alaska. The Institute's president, Rosita Worrell, says she thought all the figures were going to be male.
And do you know what they did? They put a woman on that totem pole.
After the poll was finished, Worrell asked the Yiskuu dancers to perform a few songs. Leader of the dance group, Nancy Barnes, says she was excited to be performing again.
We haven't been together. We've been Zooming every Saturday. But when Rosita asked us if we'd come out for this, we wanted to honor these awesome artists.
The pole is still lying down where it was being carved and painted. It will be installed later and unveiled when the arts campus opens. Young says it'll probably be in June. In Juneau, I'm Lindsay Brolini.
East Side Cook Inlet set netters won't fish weekends during dip net season this year. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game says that's to move fish into rivers for kenai dip netting on Saturdays and Sundays. Some fishermen worry the mandate is part of a larger trend of set netters getting allocated out of existence in favor of sport and personal use fisheries. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more.
Set netters on the east side of Cook Inlet fish for sockeye from the beaches. The Department of Fish and Game says that makes them more susceptible to catching king salmon than other commercial fisheries. And as a result, they're restricted under their management plan to a given number of fishing hours when king salmon counts are low, something that's called paired restrictions. Since the late king salmon run is expected to be poor this year, set netters will likely be limited to 24 hours of fishing each week. And it's up to Fish and Game to decide which days those openers will take place. Fish and Game Commissioner Doug Vincent Lang said in an emailed statement, the department notified the set net fishery its 24 hours would be used during the week after July 8th. He says that will help the department move more fish into the rivers for the dip net fishery, which opens in Kenai on July 10th. Third generation set netter Travis Every says that could limit how many sockeye set netters are able to harvest. And he says that could be a problem since the Kenai River was overescaped by 1 million fish last season.
Say fish show up on Sunday and there's fish showing up Saturday night and Sunday morning. With this here, we can't go in Sunday morning and have an opener.
Ken Coleman is a set netter and vice president of the Kenai Peninsula Fishermen's Association. He says openers have taken place during the week the last several seasons, starting in July. But this is the first time he's seen it in writing in the department's preseason outlook. Set netter Eric Nice says, by and large, he's not satisfied with the management decisions the department makes for the fishery. But he says he's okay with having set fishing periods.
That takes any allocation away from the department, and it turns it into more of just a chance. And eventually it'll rotate around that everyone will kind of have fish on their beach on a given opener.
He says when the department sets openers based on fish abundance, those decisions are sometimes good for one beach and bad for another. Just because the fish are running in Nanilchik, for example, doesn't mean they're also running at Selamatov, where he fishes.
I would much rather see set Monday, Thursday openers, six of those days, and just if that's how it works out where fish are on the beach, then great. I just haven't seen much success when they've been trying to pick and choose between the beaches.
And he says knowing when they can fish in advance is helpful for planning. Every says he's worried the fish aren't going to follow Fish and Game's preset schedule.
The fish don't follow a calendar.
Management is subject to change once the fish start running. If the kings do better than expected, Vincent Lang says the department could adjust its approach. But set netters are also bracing for an early closure of the fishery. Paired restrictions with the sport fishery mean that when king counts are low in the late run and the king sport fishery is closed, set netters aren't allowed to fish either. Last year, the fishery closed in July. And it's possible that set netters will face another closure this year since the Alaska Board of Fisheries rejected a proposal to loosen that restriction at its March meeting. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
A Juneau-based airline is adding a new daily circuit that will connect Wrangell, Sitka, and Petersburg. As KSTK's Sage Smiley reports, Alaska Seaplanes says the new southeast route will start flying May 26th.
The smallest of the buildings at Wrangell's small airport is a brown and white trailer. As of now, it's pretty much empty. It used to be the U.S. Customs Office, but it's currently owned by Alaska Seaplanes, which plans to start using it next month.
That right now looks kind of retro 60s, but we're going to try to update it and get it ready for service.
Andy Klein is the marketing manager for the Juneau-based airline that, despite its name, operates mostly wheel-based turboprops.
You know, every time we get to a new route, it's really like kind of starting a new business. You know, you have to get people there and train up, and we're having discussions as basic as, we need stairs, you know, we need, what vehicle should we have there? De-icer, all that stuff goes into starting up even just a daily, even just a one-stop daily route. So it's an exciting time for us, and we think it's going to be a really important link for the people of Wrangell.
Alaska Seaplanes says it aims to begin flying the route May 26th. The daily flight will depart Sitka at 1 p.m. in the afternoon, touching down in Petersburg and Wrangell before returning to Sitka by 3 p.m. Alaska Seaplanes already has flights that run to and from Petersburg and Sitka, but Wrangell is the new addition, the company's 15th Southeast community it will serve.
There's a lot of travel that goes, commerce and people that goes back and forth between Wrangell and a lot of other communities in Southeast, especially Sitka, Petersburg, that kind of route. So there's been a need for a long time.
Alaska Seaplanes started twice daily flights between Petersburg and Juneau a little over a year ago. Wrangell is currently served by twice daily Alaska Airlines jets, one northbound, one southbound. Alaska Seaplanes won't be operating on that kind of a scale.
I mean, our planes are 9-passenger planes, you know, so it's a very small segment, but it's a needed segment, especially when we're talking about medical transport for people. Sometimes that very direct route is really a lifeline for people to get the medical attention they need.
Klein says the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium, which owns and operates Wrangell's hospital, had asked the company to look into setting up a route linking Wrangell and Sitka, where Search is headquartered.
They've had this request in to us for a while now, and we just had to, as you can imagine, there's a lot to work through to get airplanes into scheduled service into a community. We've had to work through that for the last year or so.
While the company is called Alaska Seaplanes, Wrangell won't be receiving new floats. Klein says the route will be run by one of two planes. One could be the Cessna 208B Grand Caravan.
They're really a great, versatile airplane, especially for conditions in Southeast Alaska. They can take off and land in sort of shorter conditions and with lower visibility than a lot of other airplanes. So they're a great airplane.
The airline also operates Pilatus PC-12s, which are faster. Klein describes them as the Ferraris of the Alaska Seaplanes fleet, flying 300 miles per hour with pressurized cabins. Both planes carry 9 passengers, but either way, it'll be less than an hour's flying time between legs. Alaska Seaplanes hasn't published its new fares yet.
We want our pricing to be competitive. So we're still working on that. The pricing will be a little dynamic.
Other than office preparations, Klein says everything else is pretty much in place to begin running flights on May 26th.
You know, maybe get the shag carpeting out of there. I don't know. Maybe we'll keep the shag. We'll see what kind of condition it's in.
In addition to Alaska Airlines jet service, Wrangell also has one air charter, Sunrise Aviation, but it doesn't run scheduled flights. In Wrangell, I'm Sage Smiley.
Insight Daily Radio. Author, humorist, and radio personality Garrison Keillor has been a fixture in popular culture since the 1970s. With more than 30 best-selling books and his Prairie Home Companion radio program. And he has a new book entitled Boomtown, a Lake Wobegon novel. We caught up with Garrison to chat about his new book and the creative journey that continues to bring Lake Wobegon to life.
I have no patience for readings, mine or anybody else's. I simply go out and talk through a section of the novel or just pick up pieces of it, improvising, and it's it's educational. It's very, very, very instructive. And I don't know that any other writers work in the same way, but it's a beautiful advantage to be able to go from the laptop and the screen, and 2 days later you're standing in front of 500 people in a theater on the East Shore of Maryland, and you are improvising your way through that same passage, and you get a response from the audience that you were hoping for. They believe you.
That's author and humorist Garrison Keillor, whose new book, Boomtown, a Lake Wobegon novel, has just been released and is now available wherever books are sold.
Insight Daily Radio.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon. Today is Thursday. It is the 14th day of April, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 7:01. It won't set again until 9:19 this evening. That will give us 14 hours and 18 minutes of daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 55 seconds compared to yesterday. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up pretty soon at 1:20 this afternoon here on the east side. That will be a 7.8-foot tide. Over on the west side of Kodiak Island, you have a high tide coming up at 1:57 p.m., almost 2, 13.2-foot tide in Larson Bay. 45 degrees and fair skies here in Kodiak. They are calling for a slight chance of rain after 4 p.m., but mostly sunny skies. Until tonight, it's going to cloud up a little overnight. Rain and snow is likely after 1 a.m. tonight. Southeast winds increasing to 20, gusting to 30 overnight. And that's going to bring in some rain and snow tomorrow, becoming all rain after 4 p.m. tomorrow. High near 40, southeast winds gusting to 35 tomorrow. 100% chance of precipitation, but little or no snow accumulation is expected. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. Small craft advisory for tonight and Friday. South wind to 20 knots today, seas to 6 feet. Southeast 30 tonight, seas to 12 feet. And southeast 30 tomorrow, too, seas remaining at 12 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory tonight and Friday as well. South 15 today, seas to 6 feet. For tonight, southeast 30, seas to 6 feet. And for tomorrow, southeast 25, seas to 6 feet in the Shelikof. A celebration of life for Victoria Geyer will be held Monday, April 18th, next Monday, at 7 p.m. at St. Mary's Gym, followed by a finger food potluck. In lieu of flowers, donations are being accepted to defer funeral expenses. The Kodiak Audubon Society will be hosting a presentation by Katie Stoner tonight called Counting Puffins on the Kodiak Archipelago. That's happening at 6 p.m. tonight and will be via Zoom. Katie is a PhD student at Oregon State University who has studied endangered seabirds in Hawaii and penguins in Antarctica. She's also studied the Kitzlitz's murrelets for 2 summers in the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge. Her Zoom presentation will be at 6 p.m. tonight. To register, just go to the Kodiak Audubon Society's Facebook page and click on the link. If you need more information, contact Cindy Trussell at 486-2878. The Kodiak City Council will be having a regular meeting tonight. That's happening at 7:30 p.m. in the library. And they will be having a budget work session on Saturday. That meeting begins at 10 a.m. and is also going to be held in the library. The regular meeting tonight will also be broadcast here on KMXT on 100.1 FM at 7:30. Both meetings will be web-streamed. Web-streaming links and meeting packets are available at the City of Kodiak website. If you have any questions or need printed meeting materials, contact the city clerk at 486-8636. You're invited to an open house at the Kodiak Fire Station next Tuesday. Between 5:30 and 7:30 p.m., you can meet the team from Wolf Architecture that will be designing the replacement for the 60-year-old facility. Come by and enjoy a warm beverage and cookie while you learn more about this essential project and share your own thoughts. You can be a part of shaping the future of emergency response in Kodiak for the next 60 years. That's Tuesday, April 19th, next Tuesday, from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the fire station downtown. Join them for refreshments and information and to share your input. Water Hall, a commercial fishing-themed art exhibit created by Homer artist Katie Birsch and produced by the Kodiak Maritime Museum, can be viewed now at the Kodiak Island Brewery through May. Katie has fished her set net side at Ugashik Bay in Bristol Bay for decades, and the 11 pieces in this special show use objects and materials familiar to commercial fishermen to explore work, community, loss, and the natural world. For more information, contact the Kodiak Maritime Museum at 486-0384. Isle Bells will be having their 11th annual Spring Ring. That's happening Sunday, May 1st at 3 p.m., $15 general admission. That's happening at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. Again, Sunday, May 1st, the Isle Bells Spring Ring. The Kodiak History Museum is relaunching their temporary exhibit program, and they're looking for proposals for future exhibits. Is there a story you think has not been talked about enough, or a topic or issue that you'd like to see explored? KHM is accepting exhibit proposals for their new exhibit opening August 2022. Proposals must be submitted by May 1st. For more information on how to propose an exhibit, contact Lynn Walker, the curator, at curator@kodiakhistorymuseum.org or visit Kodiak History Museum's website at www.kodiakhistorymuseum.org. This Saturday, April 16th, is National Healthcare Decision Day. Its goal is to inspire, educate, and empower the public about the importance of advanced care planning. What is advanced care planning? It's making decisions about the healthcare you would want to receive if you're facing a medical crisis. Advanced planning allows you to express your desires related to end-of-life care. It's an opportunity to share your personal values, life goals, and preferences regarding future medical care. It's a gift you give to your loved ones who might otherwise struggle to make these choices about your care during a medical emergency. In the words of doctor, author, and educator Ira Byock, "I have a healthcare directive not because I have a serious illness, but because I have a family." For more information or to pick up your advanced care planning paperwork, call Hospice and Palliative Care of Kodiak at 907-512-0600. The Assembly is having a work session. That's happening tonight as well at 6:30 p.m. Agenda items include the discussion of the Carlick and Larson Bay schools, presentation of the manager's budget to the Assembly, discussion of the declaration of a disaster or emergency ordinance, and the packet review for the April 21st regular meeting. They will also be having a public hearing on Ordinance Number FY2022-14, which will amend Kodiak Island Borough Code Section 17.145.070 regarding communication tower approval criteria. Also, they will be having a public hearing on Ordinance Number FY2022-16, establishing an opioid settlement fund. New business will include contracts, a change order with Jacobs Engineering for services during the construction of the landfill Stage 3 closure project in an amount not to exceed $25,000. And in other items, authorization for Fire Protection Area Number 1 to move forward with the advertisement of an invitation for bid for the Bayside Fire Station's chief response vehicle purchase. Also, coming up on Monday, the Consolidation Committee will be having their regular meeting. That's happening Monday, April 18th, 6:30 p.m. in the Borough Conference Room.
Mm-hmm.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.